Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. It's my pleasure to continue to be with you. You're going to be glad you hung out with me because I got Steve Moore. And Steve Moore is an old friend of ours. We knew him when he was with Cato. We knew him when he was with the Club for Growth. He's now got my dream job, one of the few people I really admire, whose jobs I really, really do envy. And he's the senior economics writer for the Wall Street Journal's editorial page, the three best pages in journalism on the planet. And he's also the co-author, along with Arthur Laffer and Peter Ternus, of the outstanding book, The End of Prosperity. You see him many times a week on television, especially on CNBC. He's our good friend, Steve Moore. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back, old friend. And, I just needed you to be on the show this week because so many things are happening that are just flying in my face. And I need you to talk me down off the ledge. For example, this automobile thing, I don't understand the government's intrusion and their manipulation into the automobile industry. I understand that they put a lot of money in, but the way they're micromanaging not only the company but also the workout of the bankruptcy of Chrysler and the impending bankruptcy of GM, it's very troubling to me. What do you think?
Well, troubling is the right word, and you know, I don't even understand why we put all this money into Chrysler and GM.
And more to come.
Yeah, way more to come. And, you know, I keep telling people that Ford has still not taken a dime of taxpayer money. And, by the way, I think Ford is the company that gets really shafted here because it's trying to make it on its own without any taxpayer dollars. And it's going to have to compete with now two companies that are filled to the brim with, you know, I think at last count, over $50 billion of money that have been put in by taxpayers to these companies. And I have a sneaky suspicion. In fact, it's more than a sneaky suspicion. I'd bet 5-1 odds that this is going to require more and more and more money over a long period of time, and this is going to become an albatross around the taxpayer's neck.
At what point in time do we say enough?
That's exactly the question I was going to ask. You know, I don't know the answer to that, but I think we should have said enough a long time ago because there's no plan of action. There's no exit strategy. Look, does anyone out there really believe that a car company that's run by the United Auto Workers and the U.S. government is going to make money?
What a
joke. Especially, by the way, Jim, when you've got Nancy Pelosi and the Congress telling them what kind of cars to build.
Exactly. Well, you know, Steve, the only thing that would be interesting about that whole scenario where the UAW owned 55% of a company and the government owned 35% of the company and the bondholders owned 10%, which is, I think, it was going to be a ripoff. The only thing interesting about that is I actually would pay admission to watch a negotiating table with the union on both sides of the table. What do you think? Wouldn't that be fun to watch?
That's a very good point, Jim. Excellent point. I mean, now, but you know,
You know what? Hey, Steve, you know what I think? If that actually comes to pass, I think I'm going to try to negotiate the concession rights and the movie rights or something. That could be worth some money.
I wish the Wall Street Journal would let me negotiate my own salary. But you know, you're right. That's a really good point. I mean, who's going to oversee the costs of this? And you know, look, let's face it, folks. I mean, we all know that this was not a bailout of Chrysler and GM. This was a bailout of the United Auto Workers.
Yes.
And this is all about the power
That's
of
exactly
the unions
right.
That is so amazing. I mean, everything we are doing in Washington right now is aimed towards helping unions, whether it's public employee unions, the UAW, the AFL-CIO. It's almost like the unions have become the fourth branch of government in Washington.
Well, you know, Barack Obama basically, I mean, I have to say...
He told us what he was going to do.
He told us. I have no animosity or anything towards Barack Obama. I mean, I don't agree with a lot of his values, but he, and his the way he thinks about America is different from mine. But he's basically been true to his word. He said, we need more unionism. He used that word, unionism.
Yes.
He's the only person I ever heard use that term, unionism. And you, like, as in capitalism, you know, and he used it, and he's been true to his word, but I don't understand how the union wound up with 55% of Chrysler.
Well,
I don't blame the bondholders for saying let's just see what we get in bankruptcy. Do you blame them for that?
Well, first of all, I think that
Well,
both in the Chrysler and GM case, I really believe that this was that they got screwed. I hate to use that
term, but
the bondholders. Yeah. I mean, look, they're first in line. Everyone knows corporate finance 101.
Hold on to that thought, Steve.
Bondholders are first in line on the.
I'll let you come back after these messages. Stay with us. There, the birds bringing us back. 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for using it to your advantage. We built it just for you. You've got my blog there, my knowledge base, thousands of articles that I've written or my Brain Trust members have written, thousands of archives of past interviews that we've collected for you and held in made available to you on demand at your convenience. So I hope you'll check those out. Anything under the small business sun, we got something for you there that will help you, whether you got 5 seconds or 15 minutes. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. We'll send it to you every Sunday afternoon by email, get you ready for the week ahead. And then, of course, you can follow me on Twitter if you want, at Jim Blasingame. Steve Moore is our guest. Stephen Moore is the co-author of The End of Prosperity, How Higher Taxes Will Doom the Economy If We Let It Happen. And I encourage you to find this book wherever books are sold. Steve, wrapping up on the automobile scenario, the government wanted the plan out of bankruptcy for Chrysler was for the UAW to have 55% of Chrysler, and for GM they were going to have 35%, weren't they?
You know, I don't know what the exact. You're right about the Chrysler situation.
I think GM was 35%, but that's all changed now. I mean, somebody finally pushed back on the unions, and they blinked, didn't they?
Yeah, but you know, I never really understood why it is the unions really wanted 55% of ownership, because it isn't, you know, it probably is getting close to having a negative net worth, and so 55% of nothing is nothing. You know, look, I hope that I'm wrong. I don't want people to lose their jobs. There are some, you know, 250 to 300,000 Americans who are employed by these two companies, and look, GM is an iconic company in America.
Yep.
I think what we should do, Jim, let it go through a proper bankruptcy without government involvement. Let the company restructure. I personally think, and I know some of my labor friends are going to, I don't think there's a path to profitability as long as the UAW is around. I think you have to you have to bust that union.
It's a dinosaur.
You have to. I mean, look, we have auto plants all over the United States in the South. You know, BMW and companies like that, Honda, Toyota. That are paying good salaries, you know,
$30
an hour Mercedes, but they're not UAW, and that makes a big difference. And
the point you're making is we have a successful auto industry in America, just not in Detroit.
It's not in Detroit, and it's not UAW. And you know, look, you asked me about the way they screwed over the bondholders. Mm-hmm. Now a lot of the bond buyers are saying, and hedge fund managers saying, we're not buying any bonds of any unionized company anymore because it's too dangerous. I mean, when you upset 200 years of corporate law, which we've done here and just trampled over the rights, we transferred, we had the government come in and essentially, I'm going to put this very simply, folks, the government stole $5 billion that is rightfully owned by the bondholders and gave and transferred that money to the unions.
In one fell swoop.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, what he just said is absolutely what happened, and that's well put. I've never heard anybody else say it that succinctly.
Well, it's theft.
Yep. Well, so anyway, so that's one of the issues we've got going on, and do you think it looks like GM is going to go into bankruptcy next week?
Yeah, I don't see any. But you described it well. This is kind of a controlled bankruptcy where the government has greased the wheels of it. And it's not the kind of bankruptcy I wanted. I wanted a bankruptcy that would free the company from the contracts that it's under. You know, bankruptcy does not mean that a company goes out of business. It means reorganization.
Right.
I don't think the kind of proper reorganization is going to happen under this bankrupty
because the judge won't be in charge.
The union.
The judge won't be in charge. The union, the government will be.
That's right.
Exactly right. And by the way, for the record, Steve, I predicted that GM would go into bankruptcy in 2006.
Wow.
In my 2006 predictions. So I was only 3 years early.
That's a good call.
Hey, let's move over and talk about something else that's big right now, and that's the nomination of Judge Sotomayor for the Supreme Court. Now, she's been on the news all week long. The president announced her on Tuesday. One of the things, before he ever announced to anybody, he said that a judge he's going to be looking for will have empathy for the things, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, the things that normal, regular Americans go through. Isn't that the opposite of what we should be looking for in a Supreme Court judge?
Well, you know, first of all, I mean, Judge Sotomayor has a really impressive resume, no question about it. I mean, her life story is a great one of, you know, rising up out of poverty. And, you know, it's a great American success story, and it's what makes this country great. So I like a lot, you know, the fact that she's a success despite all sorts of barriers in her life. But you're right. I mean, the problem with her is that when you quoted her as saying, you know, that she has empathy, you know, for the little guy. I want someone who has empathy for the Constitution.
That's the job at that point, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, this idea, well, gee, I can see through the eyes of someone who's poor and Latino and woman. And, you know, and I'm also a little concerned about, you know, the fact that this is all about identity politics, racial identity politics, you know. And, oh, you can't attack her because she's an Hispanic woman. And you know, isn't this wonderful that we finally – let's just put the best minds. And she may be a great mind. I don't know that all that much about her.
Right.
But let's, you know, celebrate people for their mind, not the color of their skin or their ethnicity or their gender.
There's nothing wrong with her. Of course, it's great that, as you say, she's overcome all of these things. But, ladies and gentlemen, when you see the Lady Justice holding the scales, please notice that there is a cloth over her eyes. She's blind to whoever's in front of her. The issues on the table are what is her job, and so it will be for Judge Sotomayor. Hopefully, she'll do that. 10 till, right back with Steve Moore. Stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Steve Moore is our guest, the co-author of The End of Prosperity, How Higher Taxes Will Doom the Economy If We Let It Happen. Ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you to check out this book. Stephen is the co-author along with Arthur Laffer and Peter Tanous. Steve, that's a book. Books available wherever books are sold. Your website is WSJ for WallStreetJournal.com.
That's right.
My favorite publication on the planet. I can't get enough of it and have been for a long time. And I thank you for the good work you guys are doing up there.
Well, it's great to, you know, you're right. It is the best three pages of journalism. I'm a little biased, but, you know, I hope people will check out the journal editorial page. It's the best way to keep up with all the current events.
It's outstanding, ladies and gentlemen. Steve, one of the things that, one last thought on Sotomayor. I'm concerned about what I'm calling the sanctity of contracts. Not contracts, but the sanctity of contracts, the concept of a contract. I'm concerned about the jeopardy that the sanctity of contracts is being put in right now on many, many levels, and I'm concerned that Judge Sotomayor may not be part of the problem there as well. What do you think?
I think it's a good point, and I think it's not so much Sotomayor. I mean, when you and I talked about just that Chrysler deal, I mean, the reason the Chrysler dealer is so abhorrent is that it tramples on the sanctity of contract. And,
right.
And so I think you are right that that's something we really need to be concerned about. One of the reasons America is a rich country is we've had a rule of law. And, the countries that are poor, they just make up the rules as they go along. And we have an established rule of law that is protected by the courts,
mm-hmm.
and it's the basis for our capitalist free enterprise system.
Right, exactly. And I'll tell you something else, ladies and gentlemen. The concept, the sanctity of a contract in its most elementary form is the keystone, the cornerstone, I should say, of society. Steve?
Well put.
never mind Wall Street, never mind Main Street, never mind small business. It's the cornerstone of society. And when you start messing around with that, you're opening Pandora's box and heading off into bizarro world. Hey, Steve, one last thing before you go. Even as we speak in Copenhagen, a city I was in 2 years ago, there's a climate change forum going on right now, and I feel they're up to no good over there. What do you think?
Well, that's for sure. That's putting it lightly. I mean, look, I'm one of those people who thinks that climate change is a hoax. I think that the science is highly unsettled about this. I think that the extreme environmentalists have glommed onto this issue because they hate capitalism and they hate growth and they hate prosperity.
And America, too. Many of them.
Right, exactly. And here's the point, though. Even if, I'm sure a lot of your listeners do believe that global climate change is a big problem. Even if it is, this idea of cap and trade will do nothing to change the global temperature or to reduce greenhouse gases. But what it will do, Jim, is it will mean that jobs leave the United States,
yes.
Factory jobs, and they will go to China, India, Bangladesh, other countries. And all we're doing, if we sign on to this cap and trade, is we're committing what I call economic hari-kari.
Well, not only is it going to hurt our own economy, Steve, but in a recent article that I wrote, I made the point that by lowering the emissions in the United States, taking us back to 1990 levels, we actually could increase emissions, because those jobs you're talking about are going to go from a pretty darn carbon-efficient industry environment to a very carbon-inefficient environment.
Yes, you're exactly right about that, Jim. I mean, well put. We are, for all the talk about America being the polluter, we are a highly energy-efficient, highly carbon-efficient
mm-hmm.
economy. If you move those jobs to, third-world countries, they engage in real pollution, and not talking about carbon. Talk about smog, lead, carbon monoxide and things like that that really do make you sick. And we've had a great track record of the last 30, 40 years of cleaning up the air in this country. It's
per
amazing.
Dollar of GDP, we use less carbon than ever before for our production.
We use half as much energy per unit of GDP today than we did 30
but
years
businesses
ago.
That's unheralded. That kind of behavior is unheralded by Al Gore and those guys.
Well, and the point is, you don't need government to tell businesses to do that. The reason businesses became more energy and electricity efficient was because the price of, remember, during the 70s and early 80s,
mm-hmm.
prices rose. And the market works. When something rises in price, you become more efficient in using it.
Exactly. Well said. Well, I'd like to remind people that climate change is real. 5,000 years, 10,000 years ago, Kentucky was under 5,000 feet of ice. So, yes, climate, global warming is true. It's actually happening. Hey, Steve, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Jim, nice to talk to you, and keep up the great work. Love your show.
I appreciate it. Steve Moore, ladies and gentlemen. That's WSJ for WallStreetJournal.com. Check it out when you get a chance. It's good stuff. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll be back after the news. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.